Hello, and welcome to Say That Podcast, where your big questions get real answers. My name is Matt King. I'm your host here in the city of Chicago. Joining us here is Jed Brewer.
Man, it's going great. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. It's going awesome.
Absolutely right. With us all over Murfreesboro, Tennessee is Lee Younger.
I mean, blessed and highly favored, right? That's how the Christians are doing.
Well, if you're listening to this episode, that means that despite some things that folks may have been saying last week, nobody got raptured on Eclipse Day, so we're...
Or, guys, we didn't make it.
That's right.
Well, now in fairness, I was warned about that possibility several times. So
apparently Jed has been to every church in Florida. By the way, in the 90s.
Yeah.
Therefore, Jeb heard a lot about the rapture and who was and was not going to make it.
Dude, if you're the kind of person where you like a bad movie, and like that's fun for you, there is a Christian horror movie, I think it's a series, but from kind of like the early 80s called Rolling Thunder. That is basically like a horror suspense thing, like based on the rapture. And I saw it when I was like 5 years old. And man, like, I'm sure it's laughable as an adult, but when you're five, you're like, oh my God.
Well, leave it to the Christians to show their 5-year old a horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's great, this man.
Clearly isn't the right one, but I've Googled Rolling Thunder film. And what comes up is a 1977 American psychological thriller starring Tommy Lee Jones and Dabney Coleman. That doesn't sound right.
We're going to get into this, man. We're going to find this.
Yeah. While we're doing that, I will point out that, we mentioned in the last episode that maybe, you know, we would be the official podcast of the afterlife if we did get apocalypsed. But I like the idea that I think people who take the rapture and like Left Behind and all that stuff very, very seriously would consider having to listen to this podcast a type of tribulation. So maybe that's another thing we can have going.
That's got to be true.
All right. I found it. I was close. So the movie I was thinking is called A Distant Thunder.
Oh.
But from Wikipedia, A Thief in the Night is an evangelical Christian film series about the rapture and the tribulation. It consists of four films: A Thief in the Night from 72, A Distant Thunder from 78, Image of the Beast from 81, and The Prodigal Planet from 83. Three additional films were planned but never produced.
The Prodigal Planet is not a terrible band name.
No, dude. Like, if that was like a mashup of Prodigy and Diggable Planets, I would be here for that. Like, right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that would be good.
Wow. I'm on the same Wikipedia page as Jed, and obviously one of the fun things doing on a Wikipedia for any such thing is to just see whose name is blue. Like, what have these people ever done? And for this one, only two of the credited people, the producer, nope. None of the actors, one of the three writers, that's right, it took three writers to dig out this series of films, was also a co-writer on the 1958, or an associate producer on the 1958 version of The Blob.
Wow.
So that's kind of a horror bona fide.
I have the Criterion copy of that. I didn't realize that connection. I'm not sure how I feel about that now.
A bit strange.
Yeah. All right, I think for our listeners, I'm going to read you off of Wikipedia the plot synopsis because I think you're going to enjoy it.
Please do.
I think this is the right voice, so bear with me. Patty Myers is a young woman who considers herself a Christian because she occasionally reads her Bible and goes to church regularly, although her pastor is actually an unbeliever.
Unbeliever is linked on Wikipedia with a linked article.
She refuses to believe the warnings of her friends and family that she will go through the Great Tribulation if she does not accept Jesus as her Savior. One morning, she awakens to find that her husband and millions of others have suddenly disappeared. Gradually, Patty realizes that the rapture has happened. The United Nations establishes an emergency government system called the United Nations Imperium of Total Emergency, or UNITE. And those who do not receive the mark of the beast, identifying them with UNITE, are arrested. It goes on like that for quite some
time. Yeah, at what point did you realize, Jed, when you were reading in The Voice, did you realize that this plot summary is like six paragraphs long?
there's a lot there. I just wanted to make sure that We got the first few things, and that we got to the part of crapping on the United Nations. Like, not a perfect organization by any stretch, very much a checkered history, but I love the idea that an organization designed to prevent world wars, that's the villain in our minds.
I want to hear that synopsis read in Kate Blanchett's Galadriel voice from the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Sure. Understandable. My favorite part about this is, so the United Nations forms a task force, the acronym for which is UNITE.
Right.
That's like a type of bad writing that only Christians can do. Like, that just kind of loops back in on itself so perfectly.
Yeah.
Like, we couldn't think of a second obvious word.
Yeah.
Well, in the off chance that you're listening to this in whether your eternal reward or your fiery punishment, and it's hard to say which, but just in case, the end of all things was upon us last week, maybe we can go back through and look at some reasons why. One reason might be indicated in this article from a few years ago that resurfaced recently. Pastor says Jesus hasn't returned because people haven't donated enough money.
Wow.
Televangelist Jesse Duplantis told viewers if they donated more cash, they could, quote, speed up Jesus' return.
Wow. Wow. That's some hardcore blasphemy, bro. I mean, like, you went all the way with it. And in a sense, like, respect, bro. Respect.
During a four-day event entitled Victory-thon, which aired on the Victory Channel, when he made the claim.
I thought you were going to end that last word with a G, and I thought that was going to be a massively different thing.
I mean,
yeah,
I haven't been to the merch page of the Victory Thon. I don't know what they're putting out there.
I think it's worth noting that all garments with that name, like, if you're in a place where you're like, no, I'm going to rock that, that is a victory. So I would note that all thongs are victory thongs.
As someone who's been to the beach in Italy, I disagree. Profoundly disagree with declaring that a victory.
Oh, man. I love the idea that, in a serious conversation one time, that the three of us were having, Jeb was
talking
about...
That's right, we have those. Don't laugh, listener.
We do. Yeah. Jeb was talking about how much, like, rhetoric that's supposedly Christian is just absolutely, actually, just like, total atheistic rhetoric. In other words, and what he meant by that was, you see these guys' values, and you realize you don't actually believe in a moment where your actions will be judged.
Yeah.
You are a practical atheist, even though you claim the name of Jesus Christ, because the things that you do, they are the absolute opposite of the heart of God as prescribed by his revealed will in the scriptures. And you are proving that you don't believe that there will be a moment where your actions will be judged. And I love the idea that this guy is a prime example of that, in the sense that he's like, I don't believe that's ever going to happen, so I'm just going to get as much money as I can.
Yeah.
Yeah. To a quote from the Victory Thon, and what is hindering all these things from because people are not doing in the financial realm, because we're living in an economic world, what God has called them to do, you know, he's called us to do that. I don't have a problem with giving. I don't have a problem with receiving. It doesn't make any difference. I just made up my mind. I want Jesus to come.
That's kind of a word stew, all right?
Kind of word stew. I like, I don't mind giving or receiving, maybe receiving. Sure. Maybe I'll do the receiving for a little while, and then we can We can figure it out later if that's what God wants. It makes no difference. I mean, I'd imagine to the people sending in part of their SSRI check, it matters significantly.
Yeah. So I Googled Jesse Duplantis's net worth, and it's estimated at about $20 million.
Sure.
And, dude, I just got to ask, like, what are you grifting for, buddy? Mm. Like, that's... Like, you're set, man. Like, you do... Here's my open question. Here's my open letter to Jesse Duplantis. What is it that you want in life that you can't currently do because you don't have the money for it?
Yeah, good question.
Well, I bring up another quote from the article. Duplantis also joked about owning a jet, which he said he would hand over, quote, the day after the rapture.
Cool.
That's good stuff. Also, going back to that original quote, we are living in an economic world. Sounds like the attempt to do a highbrow version of Material Girl.
Yes.
Like if Lana Del Rey did it and it was just like that little bit more artistic. I would enjoy that. Yeah. Well, from one, and by the way, in case you haven't figured out, this is going to be an Oops All Emergency show because, again, occasionally these stack up and we just got to get back through and just check in on how things are going. While we're in the financial section here. This is a fun one from the, now we talk a lot on the show about how, you know, a lot of things in scripture are not meant to be a literal and that there's a, you know, Jesus used metaphor a ton, used hyperbole a bit. But sometimes in there is just a good idea. And that brings us this headline from the Daily Beast, $500,000 sand dune designed to protect coastal homes washed away in just 3 days.
Wow. Okay.
In a drastic attempt to protect their beachfront homes, residents in Salisbury, Massachusetts invested $500,000 in a sand dune to defend against encroaching tides. After being completed last week, the barrier made from 14,000 tons of sand lasted just 72 hours before it was completely washed away, according to WCVB.
Wow, man.
What do you think the sermon illustrations from the pastors that week in Massachusetts were about?
Could it have possibly been, let us all turn to Matthew chapter 7.
It is very rare to get a, I tried to warn ye from Jesus of Nazareth. I tried to warn you about this exact situation. Your houses were too built on sand. And your answer was to invest more money in more sand.
Well, yeah.
I hope, and if you have the money to have a beachfront home in Massachusetts, I hope you have enough resources that you can take a chuckle at the irony. Because literally, one of the great books of wisdom from the ancient world tried to warn you not to do the thing you did. That's tough. Now, from the other side of it says directly not to do this in the Bible, and this one is far more innovative. Fox and Friends hosts recently prayed to Jesus on air during a sponsored segment from the Halo app.
Wait, man, you're going to have to back up and run that past me again. What on earth?
Okay. Well, I didn't even mention the weirdest part, which involves Mark Wahlberg. So we talked last year about how Transformers actor and convicted hate crime doer. That's true. Look it up. Mark Wahlberg was doing a do Lent with me kind of thing because he's very Catholic now, apparently, which, hey, good for him. If you have his kind of checkered past, and again, hate crime level checkered past, good for you. Good of you to turn your life around. So last year he did a thing of like, oh, you can go on the whatever, and I'm going to, you know, here's what I'm reading for Lent, and you can join along. That's cool. And then exactly 1 year later, they found a way to monetize it.
Okay.
Ah, Lent. You may have seen, if you were on the internet or watching sports on television, as I have been recently, you may have seen a blue ton of advertisements for Halo. H-A-L-L-O-W. Join Mark Wahlberg and Jonathan Rumi on Halo, the number one prayer app. As seen on Fox News, Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, Alatea, The Christian Post, and NBC. The prayer app that's been seen on The Wall Street Journal.
Wow. I know that we're discussing a lot of bad news. Would we permit a moment of personal celebration?
Sure.
Having, you know, grown up in deeply weird Christian stuff, I think this is a first where there's a deeply weird Christian thing that I had not heard of. And that I just want to take that moment and savor it. Like, I really, this feels like kind of a coming of age moment for me.
No, I think that's fair. And also, that speaks how busy Jed has been recently, a weird entertainment industry thing that you didn't know about.
Yeah.
So you've got the Halo app, the number one prayer app, apparently, which you can get for $5.83 a month, or you can get for $9.99 a month, or you can go with the annual plan and get that for $70 for the year, saving 41%.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So far, according to a live updating counter they have on their website, 488 million prayers have happened on Halo.
Oh, wow.
So that's cool.
Yeah, because in the Bible, counting things and bragging about it always turns out to be good.
Yeah. God's big fan.
So, the guy from Boogie Nights found a way to monetize Lent via an app.
That's quite a sentence you just uttered, sir.
Well, it's not over yet. And part of the marketing for that prayer app was doing a sponsored prayer on television.
Cool. Cool.
Again, wow. If you just gave someone with no background a copy of the Gospel of Matthew and said, hey, make up something sacrilegious that would be really go against this, the stuff that's in here, like make it as blatant as you can. I'm not sure you could come up with much more than pray in public because you're getting paid for something that monetizes Lent.
Yeah.
That's really hard to beat, man.
I don't know if you guys know, but like, if you commit a certain number of sins simultaneously, like all at the same time, it cancels all of them out.
Oh, it's like a double jeopardy situation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
I like that.
Yeah.
Church law.
It's the compounding property of forgiveness.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, as speaking of church financial crime, that's right. We've got one more of these stories to go. This one's a little more fun for me, but at least it's on the other side of things. From Charlotte, North Carolina, usher accused of embezzling from Charlotte's largest Catholic parish.
Okay.
St. Matthew Catholic Church is preparing to serve thousands at Easter Mass on Sunday, but while Charlotte's largest Catholic parish is getting ready for the crowds, community members may be upset when they learn that one of their ushers has been embezzling from the church in the thousands of dollars.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
I know it's hard to get volunteers, but this man embezzled over $500,000.
Wow. Wow.
From a church in Charlotte. So I'm not, look, and here, I certainly don't want to engage in anything that would be seen as victim blaming for this or any other crime, but you know, the easiest way not to get $500,000 stolen from your church.
Tell me.
Don't have $500,000.
Ah,
yeah.
Well,
don't have $500,000 in cash that over a certain amount of time, somebody can apparently walk off with.
Well, let me ask you this, Matt King. Let me ask you this. What else are we supposed to do with that money? Huh? Yeah,
exactly. What do you expect us to, like, house the homeless or feed the poor?
No, I mean, you don't get a building for that. If someone's way too excited to volunteer, that can be a red flag in and of itself. pastors. I know that getting people to volunteer is like pulling teeth, and you know, this guy seems really, really excited to do it. Maybe
Jeff is always on time. That's wild.
Yeah. Really, you know, maybe not the right thing. Maybe that's just a red flag in and of itself. The church's accounting team discovered that what happened when they went to count the collection and found out that one of the bank deposit bags was missing.
Wow.
This guy did a real Italian job.
That's like a really bold crime. I mean, because like what I'm hearing is, when I was a kid, you know, and I watched cartoons, like crime was always a guy that had absconded with like a cloth bag with a money symbol on it.
Sure.
Right. And now we got to chase him. And it sounds like this is fairly close to that.
From what it sounds like, they're using the term embezzling. It sounds like he literally just pulled cash out of the collection plate.
Wow.
And again,
wow.
Similar to, as Lee was pointing out, if Jed has mentioned this in serious conversation of a couple times, you got to be real sure there's not a God.
Yeah.
Just straight up dipping out of the collection plate. or here's where the movie is, or this could be a Robin Hood situation where the guy looked around at how much money was in the building fund and thought, yeah, I'm going to keep some of this.
Dude.
Yeah.
That's an amazing thought. That he like went to the budget meeting, was discouraged by the direction the elders were taking, and thought, I'm gonna write this wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is he feeding the poor himself? Well, he's not that good a guy. He did buy a car for himself, but, and I quote, this would be the quote, and like, it's still better than what they were doing with it. And he might have a point.
It's true.
Okay. I'm fascinated to know, the article that we have, does it mention the kind of car?
Oh, he didn't actually buy a car. I'm just saying this.
Oh, okay.
Writing the screenplay here where he's not fully going to Robin Hood. He's not robbing from the rich and giving to the poor. He's just taking from them so they can't do anything stupider with it.
Well, that's fair. That's fair.
And that's kind of a harm reduction via theft.
That's really funny. I was talking to a guy actually yesterday, who has a close connection with a mega church. And he was like, yo, you know, if you're ever looking to change some of the equipment that you guys use at Triple C, you should know that, like, this guy was telling me their church is looking to offload some equipment because, the board that they bought two of them. And I was like, well, why'd they buy two? And he literally said, because two is better than one. Do they use two of them? No, they use one of them. Do they have another facility where they use the other one? No. They bought two because two are better than one.
Like,
our
scripturally?
Amps are one louder.
Yeah.
Normally, amplifiers go to 10. Ours go to 11.
Why don't you just make 10 louder? And then when you go to 10, then it's louder.
No. You don't understand. Ours are one louder.
I can't eat this bread. I can't fold it. I can't go on.
When your church's purchasing policy is indistinguishable from This Is Spinal Tap, when we've reached that point, you need to stop.
That's right. It's time to take a knee.
Yeah. And again, the two is better than one. Hey, that's in the Bible. That's cool. not really. That doesn't make it a biblically sound strategy.
It's not about gear purchasing.
Yeah. Two are better than one because they give a good return for their labor. Not if one of them is turned off and in the closet.
That's right.
Wow. A cord of three unused strands is not easily broken.
Which, yeah, makes you wonder, Lee, if you encounter this person again, I hope you will be able to resist trying to out-churchy church them when they're like, well, two is better than one, being like, well, the word says that three is not easily broken like a group of two. So that's not like you're being very good stewards.
Where's your third mixing
board?
According
to Ecclesiastes. Huh? That's why whenever we buy mic cables, we buy them in threes and braid them together, rendering them useless. Well, I'm glad we brought up the megachurch there, because our next story definitely comes from that spectrum of things. This is from the New Republic, which, you know, we occasionally pull stuff from the Reuters Report or Christianity Today or even some Twitter accounts that, you know, archive wacky Christian things. When we go to the New Republic has a story about church stuff, you know you're in for something a little wild.
Let's do it.
Headline, How Evangelicals Use Digital Surveillance to Target the Unconverted. The hot new thing in proselytizing is an app that allows Christian conservatives to collect data on whole neighborhoods of potential converts.
Right on.
The app, called Bless Every Home.
Stop.
Which has been backed by some of the biggest names in evangelical circles, is mapping the personal information of immigrants and non-Christians in a bid to conduct door-to-door religious conversions and prayer walking rituals through their neighborhoods.
Wow. Man, there's a lot there.
There is. There's even more here. The app boasts influential supporters, including the former leader of the Southern Baptist Convention, Jim Henry, and controversial Christian data harvesting firm Glue. Spelled G-L-O-O.
Cool.
Christian data harvesting firm, Glue.
Yikes.
The folks behind the $1 billion He Gets Us ad campaign.
Can we talk about the fact that the... like right-wing Christians that were super, super against the vaccine, that it was all about that thing supposedly was all about privacy.
Yeah.
And like,
it was about other stuff.
I don't want to get a chip inside me from a liquid, from a tiny needle.
Sure.
That's going to track, you know, where people are and what they're doing, but let's develop something that tells us everything about where people are and what they're doing.
come on, man.
Here's a very, very fun paragraph from the story about Glue, the Christian data harvesting company behind the He Gets Us campaigns. This is from February 2023, when those commercials just started coming. Missiologist, which may be the world's most made-up job title, and author Ed Stetzer, who consulted on the campaign, and a man who once called someone to try to get me fired.
Yeah.
For something I tweeted at him. That was fun. That was like 12 years ago. Who was on the campaign, called the ads pre-evangelism. Stetzer, at the time, the director of Wheaton College's Billy Graham Center, also... a fun backstory with the Say That podcast, a thing we have been officially red flagged by.
Yeah.
For our irreverent ways, said that in an increasingly secular society, campaigns like He Gets Us can help establish familiarity with Jesus.
I think people are familiar with Jesus.
Well, are you a missiologist, Jed?
Yeah. You know, you've got me there.
I don't. You can be if you want to be. It's totally made up. Yeah, so you can just.
Oh.
Yeah, Jed, what are you doing to make him famous?
What indeed?
So back to Bless Every Home. The app comes bundled with less attractive bell and whistles, including a range of serious privacy and data security concerns. Nevertheless, it highlights how a network of evangelicals determined to bring back the Lord to America has seen Christian beliefs plans to reverse those trends, whether its targets like it or not. Published by nonprofit missionary group Mapping Center for Evangelism and Church Growth. That's the name of a thing. The Bless Every Home app describes itself in its own promotional video as a harvest tool to reach souls for Christ. This core function has produced neighborhood maps and detailed tables of data about people from non-Anglo-European backgrounds, drawn from commercial resources typically used by marketing and data harvesting firms. So, you know that thing where you Google, like, something, you're looking for the type of, you know, part for your computer and you Google it. And then when you log into your Gmail or you're scrolling a website or you go to YouTube, you see that thing over and over again because Google is cookie that's what you're looking for. It's like that, but then the world's most annoying people show up at your house on a prayer walk.
I like the idea of, quote, the world's most annoying people, end quote, is the byline for this megachurch. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah.
Shoreline Church. The world's most annoying people.
Powered by glue.
Yeah.
Which is spelled with two O's.
Yep. Lord knows we can't just go walking through our neighborhood, knocking on doors and meeting people, which is, I mean, I know people who do it in good faith, but even that's maybe not the best start to a relationship. But, well, we harvested your data first.
Yeah.
We know you live here and you're not white. So that's where we started. Nothing ominous about that.
I
think what I'm learning so far between this and the Mark Wahlberg thing is Christians shouldn't be allowed to make apps.
You know, that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, hey, Christians, if you want to try not being not of the world, let's start with smartphone apps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody sent me some, you know, TikTok of a couple of like white podcasters saying something that was clearly not true. And they were amazed by this fake fact or whatever. And that was my first thought was like, and I say this kind of tongue in cheek being that we are all part of a podcast, but I was like, it's far too easy for white people to get podcasting equipment.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think, barrier to entry. We spent a lot of time technology lowering the barrier to entry, and maybe we've gone too far in the other direction.
Yeah.
Apparently, one of the first groups to use this type of technology was Global Gates, previously employed an evangelical couple who allegedly posed as Orthodox Jews to convert Jewish people to Christianity in the Chicago neighborhood of West Rogers Park.
Cool.
Yikes.
Cool.
And look, I know Jed is as well. I've been to West Rogers Park, and you can do a lot of being crazy, and people will just kind of keep their head down and ignore you. But don't push that too far.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't, would be the long and short of that one. Now, that brings us from one terrible, terrible evangelical idea to another. American Bible Society, which is apparently a thing, to shutter $60 million Faith and Liberty Discovery Center in Philadelphia. That's right. Think of all the things you learned in that sentence. There's something called the American Bible Society. It had, until recently, a $60 million facility called the Faith and Liberty Discovery Center. That is now closed.
I love how you started this with a real, like, Fred Rogers moment. Think of all the things you learned in that sentence.
That's right.
That was a very Fred Rogers moment, and then it got really sad.
Yeah. No, it's not like a Trip to the Crayon Factory episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. It's a sometimes we all experience loss, and those emotions are valid, too. Part of understanding your feelings is that the world can be a scary place that has things like the Faith and Liberty Discovery Center. So you think, well, you know, $60 million, that's a lot to spend on something. What kind of research did they go into this? What did they guess on? The American Bible Society had projected that the museum, centrally located on Independence Mall in Philadelphia, would draw 250,000 visitors a year. Revenue from ticket sales to the museum show a much lower number. Maybe as low as 5,400 visitors in fiscal year 2022.
Yikes.
The museum's program revenue was $54,000 and full price tickets cost $10.
Can I ask a question about this museum? This is the Faith and Liberty Museum, right?
The Faith and Liberty Discovery Center.
My bad. Faith and Liberty.
Which I hope is like the Discovery Zone, and there's ball pits and arcade games and stuff.
It's not looking good. The Faith and Liberty Discovery Center. Is this liberty for like all people, like all different kinds of people? Like, do we want to promote liberty for like all the people?
Well, this, the center, which included exhibits titled The Freedom of Faith, The Spirit of Liberty, and Struggling Towards Justice. So, you know, maybe. They do still have the, they do still have the URL faithandliberty.org, but they don't. That's a 404 page now. Want to learn something about them? Let's see here. The Faith and Liberty Discovery Center. Basically just about how it's closed, and they seem to describe everything else on the internet. That's always a good sign.
Well, here's a thing that I think you'll both enjoy. I've been browsing the last little bit, is Google Faith and Liberty Discovery Center reviews.
Oh, my. Do you have any highlights to share with us, Jed?
Well, they one of their exhibits was on American exceptionalism.
Ah.
That's, well, yeah.
But in the spirit of, you know, they probably didn't have enough people to, you know, keep it a going concern. On Google, there are 118 reviews.
Yeah.
For this Discovery Center. Let's see something here.
A 4.7 average rating, so that's something.
To put it in context, there's a big aquarium in Chicago called the Shedd Aquarium, and it's one of like 8,000 attractions here. Like, yeah, man, plenty of people go to it. It has 29,000 Google reviews.
Ah.
Well, let me ask you this, Jed. Does the Faith and Liberty Discovery Center have penguins? Because the Shedd Aquarium has penguins.
Well, that is for it.
And okay. If you're there at the right time, they walk them right through the halls.
I'm about to read a review that has to be a lie. This has to be a lie.
Can't wait.
So on TripAdvisor, because sure, why not? Melanie T from December of 2022, review titled Sparked Great Conversation. Now, before we even go further, I'm doubtful that this is true, but okay. I'll cautiously consider the possibility. Melanie T writes, a different museum that sparked great conversation with my young teen boys. No, it did not.
No, it didn't.
That is the sound a lie makes, Melanie.
And Lee can speak to this much better as someone who works with the youth regularly and has a teenage son. The list of things that spark great conversation with a teenage boy, Fortnite, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably certain movies that I'm not aware of.
A number that comes right before the number 70.
Yeah, that sparks great conversation. YouTubers with names that I cannot even imagine playing video games that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
And sneakers. I think kids still like sneakers.
Yeah.
Probably not a lot of conversation to be had there.
I think you've about covered it. That's the gamut.
And again, even in those cases, and with wonderful children, the conversation goes something along those lines, or that's cool.
And it starts and ends with the word bruh.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what it's not about. Aquariums, museums.
Yeah. Well, I found one other review that I'd like to point out because the timing here. So on Google, the most recent review is from 3 weeks ago. So this is going to start like just this guy had a good time, but there's a detail that's going to be really useful. We're going to land on very quickly. So hang with me. Mario writes, amazing museum. Wanted to bring my family to experience it with me. Oh, so far, so good. We visited on a Monday, so we had the whole museum to ourselves.
man. That was not in the business plan.
No. That's so a part of my day job, I work with companies, and part of it is getting reviews on their websites and Google profiles and stuff. And there's a fun thing that people do where they're leaving what is overall a positive review, but there's one detail in it that is so disheartening that it kind of undoes all of it. And that's right up there with, it was great. We were the only ones there.
Yep.
You know, everybody else we called was booked up, but these guys came out the next day.
Well, on this same review, it looks like there's some standard questions that maybe the Google Reviews bot, you know, wants to ask you. And so, like, you know, what type of day did you visit on? And they've entered, we visited on a weekday. And then the Google bot has asked, what was the wait time? And they have listed no wait. But then I really love where this lands. The Google bot has asked, reservation recommended? ? They have answered, not sure. And my question back to you is, what are you not sure about? What indications might you have of whether a reservation would be useful at this museum of which you are the only attendees?
So, yeah, they fell a little short of the 250,000 annual visitors they were apparently assuming would just come because there's nothing else to do in the city of Philadelphia. And there's also a problem here with the larger right-wing tourist industry, I think. Because if you're the kind of person who's going to go to a museum go to the American exceptionalism display at the Faith and Liberty Discovery Center, you're the kind of person who assumes that Philadelphia is a war zone.
That's true.
That you will not be going to. We experience this a lot with Chicago. And here's the thing I say to the national news outlets, please keep that kind of coverage up because the real estate market's not great, but compared to New York, it's still fine.
Well, I just realized a through line on this, emergency, all emergency conversation, which is Mark Wahlberg in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
You know, maybe this museum would increase their tourism if they would just sprinkle in a little Mark Wahlberg. He's a Philadelphia guy. Like, get Mark Wahlberg at the museum, or get like a wax figure of him and some a Mark Wahlberg animatron with some pre-recorded messages.
In the thickest Boston accent anyone's ever had, talking about the wonders of Philadelphia.
That's right.
Actually, I want to be clear. If you've got like a super weird right-wing museum, I'm definitely not interested. But if you have a creepy animatronic Mark Wahlberg, I will show up. I will come.
He just keeps...
Okay, Jed.
He keeps sliding the words good vibrations into his monologue.
Yeah.
Sure, you can only afford the Marky Mark version. Okay, Jed. The Creation Museum, ARC, as it is today, but we replace Noah with a Mark Wahlberg animatronic.
You got yourself a deal. You got yourself a deal. I'm there.
Creation Museum people, just putting it out there.
Yeah.
Just exasperated Mark Wahlberg from the later Transformers movies where he's not really trying anymore. It's like, I got to get all these freaking animals on this ARC. Listen.
Yeah.
How are we going to get two of each of every kind of animal on this ark right here?
but I'm, you know, I do have terms and conditions, and I need this to have the feel of the mostly burned out. Well, you can go one of two ways. I'm willing to offer two kind of design inspirations. The first is the not well-maintained exhibits at Epcot Center. That kind of vibe. The other is the completely worn down, almost like this has to be intentional because it's that level of creepy thing at Chuck E. Cheese.
Wow.
Those are my two design inspirations. It's got to have at least one of those vibes.
What if, because I believe one of the big animatronic bands at like one of the Disney parks was like the one that's a Country Bear Jamboree kind of
Country
thing.
Country Bear Jamboree, man.
I believe was recently closed down. and put in because it's not Pixar branded or whatever.
Yeah.
But what if the Creation Museum bought that and just wholesale put that onto the Ark? Mm. Of like two of every animal, except for bears that play the banjo. We need six of them.
Okay. I'm not saying I would definitely go, but I would think about it.
It's tough times in the tourism industry, so I'm just saying. Ken Ham, if you listen to this podcast, I can't imagine but. Well, let's close out on just some good old fashioned grifting.
Ah, I love grifting.
And this is going to take us back to where we started on the solar eclipse apocalypse that probably wasn't. We're recording this before it happened. This is the lead from the article on julieroys.com. A convicted felon running a for-profit ministry claims Monday's solar eclipse will release a seal of revelation and could bring judgment to the United States.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. Because my wife really, really loves animals, like I have a lot of animal-centric conversations in my life. And my first thought when you read that, because he used the word release, was sure. The dude was talking about like an actual seal, the animal that was going to be released to torment the earth. And I was like, tormentor seal like that, that could be interesting. I mean, they're normally pretty sweet natured, but I love the idea of this seal is out for blood.
It really would give a different and surprising take on the seventh seal situation in Revelation. Yeah.
The seventh seal's gone rogue.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the sound of the herald of your demise.
He threw the rubber ball at me and then he ate my face.
That's right.
Dude, the seal of the apocalypse, man. I need this. Here's what I'm saying. I revealed earlier that, I was traumatized by terrible Christian movies, and I feel like the movie world owes me, and the movie that you owe me is the Demon Seals movie. That is your recompense for, the awful movie that I saw when I was a kid.
Sure. Jaws, but with seals and yeah, the end of the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that a lot. I think there's a lot there. So back to Jim Staley, whose video talking about the releasing a seal, it's in quotes, so metaphorical or aquatic, who knows, has garnered 3.7 million views and 27,000 comments of people repenting, asking for prayer, and affirming the need for judgment. If you feel the need for judgment and the desire to talk about that on some weirdo's YouTube comment section, consult a mental health professional. There's a lot of issues there that are coming to the surface. But my favorite part of it is the name of the channel of this convicted felon doing fake prophecies.
Okay.
Passion for Truth.
Wow.
Ah.
Okay.
Staley pleaded guilty to defrauding 16 mostly elderly clients of retirement funds of $3.3 million, earning himself $570,000 in commissions. Passion for Truth.
Wow.
You stole $500,000 from old people. He also told the Royce Report that he's not guilty of the charges, but rather that the federal government targeted him because he's a Christian. They make stuff up to get you to go to prison, he said. Very eloquent there.
Wow.
Yes, if there's any group that the American criminal system is known for targeting and setting up, it's white Christian finance professionals.
Clearly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why doesn't he just call the website Passion for Ruth's Money?
Kind of Lionel Hutt style. They got this all messed up.
Yeah. Website name is super close. Super, it's right there.
Passion for Truth.
So, yeah, I'm also looking at the thumbnail they used on YouTube, and it is some good, solid 1998 clip art. It's a a planet on fire with an asteroid heading towards it, which is not what an eclipse is. And it just says, this is happening April 8th, 2024.
On Windows 95.
Yeah. This solar eclipse could be the solar eclipse that unleashes one of the seals of Revelation. I'm starting to get to think this guy's talking about actual seals. He really talks about unleashing them a lot.
Yeah.
I wasn't a believer at first, but after hundreds of hours of research, I'm literally in awe of all the, quote, coincidences.
Hey.
I do like this new world we live in where I was skeptical at first, but then I read hundreds of hours of the rantings of other insane people, and now I think the thing I wanted to think from the beginning.
You do know that hundreds of hours is not actually that much time, right? Like, that's...
You also know that watching YouTube videos isn't research.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hundreds of hours is 3 weeks of a full-time job.
Right.
And you being like, well, I worked on this for 3 weeks, like, that should give you pause. Like, yeah. It took you 3 weeks to gain an expertise in the end of the world. That should concern you. Like, dude, I'm trying to think of a training program that's 3 weeks long, and I'm not sure I can think of any professional training programs that are that short.
No, I think that might be entirely fair. You're talking about, like, what, five seasons of a 24 episode TV show?
Yeah, yeah.
No, if that's how you became an expert, I would know a lot about time travel from having binged Lost. But I don't.
Dude, here's what I want desperately. I want someone to try and get a job in kind of the local parks district of their community, for which they're completely unqualified, and then explain, well, I watched every episode of Parks and Rec, so I feel like I'm ready down to do this.
In the viral eclipse prophecy video, Staley states that the number, locations, and eclipses, especially Mondays, relate to biblical prophecy predictions prophesying wars and disasters. He said that the 2024 eclipse is the twin sister to the 2017 eclipse. He added that the two eclipses are notably 7 years apart, and their two trajectories over the United States form an X on a road called Salem Road in Illinois. And that's where that sentence ends. You'd expect there to be some kind of conclusion to draw, but he just said these two things happen 7 years apart, and apparently the paths intersect. And Salem, Illinois, population 7,000 in Marion County. So I'm not any kind of eschatologist, but I don't recall that coming up.
How do you know that she's a witch?
I feel like I can do a better job of making a tenuous, but sure, why not, connection between the eclipse and the end of the world.
Please. And
it's time for the return of someone that hasn't visited the podcast in quite some time. I'm talking, of course, about numerology, Jed.
Oh, no. Here's they don't want us to know?
Matt, here's what they don't want you to know. An eclipse will occur on April 8th, 2024. 4, 8, 24. Add 4 and 8 and you get 12. Add 2 and 4 and you get 6. What is 12 but 6 and a second 6? Leaving us inextricably with 6. 6. 6.
Wait, where did the third 6 come from? You got us to 2 6s. Then we just kind of left it up to the reader to fill in that third 6 on their own.
Oh, no, sir. I'm texting you my formulation right now. Numerology, like, Jed, is no one to be trifled with, Matthew.
Not a big math guy, but okay. So he's 4, 8, 24.
He's showing his work. Numerology, yeah. Jed is showing his work.
I'm gonna read you the listener, exactly the text Lee and I have been sent. April 8th, 2024. 4, 8, 24. 12, 6. 12 equals 6 plus 6. So 12 times 6. 6 plus 6 times 6, 666.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
the math checks out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't argue with that.
I didn't spend 4 years in evil numerology school to be questioned by the likes of you.
Yes, oh, it's God. The only kind of numerology school. But most people don't even bother with it.
Yeah, they don't have pleasant numerology school.
You never see that. You never see, I've run the numerology on the Old Testament, and things are going to be really good this year. To be an uptick in charity and man's tenderness and affection and grace towards their fellow man. That's what the numerology says.
I'm bullish on loving kindness.
Yeah. Well, on that truly epic note, we will declare many, many emergencies off, and we will say goodbye. If you have a question for us, we will be back with our regular format next week. Set podcast at gmail.com, thebridgechicago.tumblr.com/ask. We'll take out the song this week. This is from our friends Pete and Tasha Lawson, their take on the hymn It As Well. Yeah, that. Thanks for listening. Just remember, we love you. God loves you. There's nothing you can do about it.